This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Last week, we had a great talk about community colleges in the U.S. and what the future might hold for these institutions and their students. This week, we're going to talk about a fairly large portion of their students and the whole population, people who have earned a GED.
They've set up a system where they're trying to provide more support, but at the same time, the test has become more difficult.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk about what it means to have a GED in the U.S. and how getting one may have just become a little harder. We'll also spend an academic minute talking about the earwax of whales, because why not? I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. One in 12 Americans do not have a traditional high school diploma, but they do have a GED. And that includes one in 8 first-time college students. That's a huge number, and it turns out it's a population that has not studied much at all. Someone who is looking into the issues these non-graduates face is Dr. Angela Long. She's an educational researcher, a professor of education, and currently serves as an independent consultant in higher education. Dr. Long is also chief editor of the new book, America's Forgotten Student Population. We spoke recently, and I asked her why she took on the topic of GEDs and community colleges.
That's really a very good question, because I think, especially in higher education, when you talk to individuals and you talk about your students, you know, right now the popular thing is looking at different races, ethnicity, and looking at our retention of these different student populations. But when you come into the conversation about students that have dropped out of high school, gone on to earn a GED, it's largely ignored. It's not something that's really brought up in these circles. And I just actually stumbled across it years ago. I was an undergraduate student, and I was working part-time at a community college. I went to a community college, and my heart is just, you know, for the community colleges, because I see the power of what it does in the lives of individuals. And just a quick, short story is I worked in the counseling department, and I, as a part-time worker, I was a GED test examiner. And so I actually looked at the students, brought them in. I would give them the 5 battery of tests and, helped with the processing of that and enjoyed it very much, not really thinking about who these individuals are in our country. And what happened is that we began to track the number of students coming into the system and looking at how many of those stayed into their second semester, second term. We were on a term, a quarterly system at the time, but it was really saddening to me, because what I found is that we were losing more than half within, just even the first few weeks. And a lot of these students that came in, they actually had a free scholarship, believe it or not, Bob. I mean, they were given, if they tested at our campus, they were given a free first term of tuition, and we were losing more than half. Over a 2 to 3 year period, only 11 went on to obtain an Associate of Arts over time. And I just begin to question, you know, as a young student, why? What is the difference? What's going on? So from there, I ended up launching myself in doing a national research in my graduate program, my doctoral studies. And today, we're looking at a population of 1 in 12 Americans. We're talking about 20 million, essentially. And most people, I don't think, realize, Bob, that there are 60 million dropouts in our country today, and 20 million of those have gone on to earn a GED. But how many know that 1 in 8 of all first-time enrolled students in the college system are GED certificate holders? I don't think people realize that. So we're dealing with a huge population of our student body in our country, not to mention just our citizen population. And these are individuals that, in my heart, in my mind, in the work I've done, they have vast potential. They have a lot to contribute to our society, our economy. They have the ability to help bring our workforce back up. And, you know, we're looking at a generation of boomers that are reaching retirement, and there's a pipeline of many of these 17 to 23-year-olds coming in, and we need them to help fill that workforce demand. And you're going to find a lot of those individuals in this select group of GED certificate holders.
You've called them the forgotten student population. Just how forgotten are they?
as I said before, it's not a conversation in higher education circles that you find, you know, as a topic of interest, really. You'll find the topic of interest amongst adult education instructors, those that work with this population. But once you get into that post-secondary environment, it goes undiscussed. You know, my mission here is to talk about this forgotten population, because what you see is a lot of them, they come in, and if you look at their backgrounds, you have to first of all go back. Why do these students, number one, drop out from high school? Well, that's a whole other area of research, but from just a qualitative perspective, a lot of these individuals, they are very bright, talented people, but life has happened. Life happens. You know, we all experience failure. We all experience hardship. But for a lot of individuals that have dropped out of high school, they do so for many reasons. It could be, you know, a pregnancy, a family crisis. It could be an illness. Some of them literally just, they get into the wrong crowd and they don't feel like they belong and they leave. Now, this was a national work that I did looking at community college enrollment. Over the course of a year of comparing high school diploma holders and students with GEDs nationally, I actually found that those that had GEDs that persisted had higher GPAs. And that's really not something that people would even maybe consider, but a lot of these individuals tend to be older, you know, female, they have children, and they are very smart in that they are equivalent to any high school diploma holder, but people are not giving them the support they need once they come into the system. So, you know, bottom line is this: how many of our college support personnel really take the time to look at this specific population? Because you're dealing with people from every race, ethnicity, background, socioeconomic status, and they need support. It's what they've lacked in high school. They need it now in their life. And that's what I will say, you know, really stands out to me in the work I've done in this research, is support is huge. And a lot of the things that we can do in our colleges, it doesn't cost anything. It's about taking the time to reach these individuals to help them be successful. And it's critical to their college success.
I think one of the important words you said is that the people who persisted is the people who did, you know, go to that second year of college.
Yes.
They're the ones
Yes.
who are going to thrive.
That's right. But in order to thrive, you know, because I started a program here at Santa Fe College in Gainesville, Florida, and I worked with student government, which was an amazing experience for me. The student body president, a team of student leaders, we actually traveled to D.C. to propose something to the U.S. Department of Education, met with Martha Cantor, the undersecretary at the time, and it was powerful. And what we did from that experience is we started this program at Santa Fe, which is mentioned in the book, and it's called the Pathways to Persistent Scholars Program. What we did is we took in students coming in, you know, their first year, some were even in their second, and put them in a cohort learning community environment. We gave them full support. We had other student leaders volunteer to provide tutoring and support network for them. And I will tell you, it was amazing over the year-long process of just the first year to see the transformation in the lives of these people. And once they got into their second year, Bob, I was seeing many of them enter Phi Theta Kappa. They became active as volunteers in the community. Everything we talked about pay it forward, giving back, you know, striving to be the best you can be, it was drilled into them. And so it's not about ability, because they are capable. It's about perception of how they view their own abilities. And I think we really have to tap into being that voice of encouragement for these very students.
What types of support were given to the individual students?
Number one, it's how we treat them. I think that a lot of college personnel, they tend to stereotype GED certificate holders as being, you know, academically underprepared. They view them as dropouts. So imagine going into a college experience and inwardly you feel like a failure. Inwardly you see yourself as a dropout. We've got to stop viewing them as dropouts and viewing them as successful individuals who have the potential to be, you know, whatever it is that they desire to be in society as leaders. And so what we did in this particular program, just by my own experience, is I called them scholars. I told them, you're going to be selected and you will participate in a cohort model. So I had people from, you name it, all walks of life, 17 to 60-year-olds in the same room talking about their life experience. And we did a lot of intrusive tutoring. It was all volunteer-based, partnered with Phi Theta Kappa. A lot of what I did is I would make personal phone calls. Even before school started, you have to catch them up front, because once they come into the college environment, many of these people feel very lost. You know, I was blessed with a family that my parents went to college, so I had that support. A lot of these people do not have that support. So the colleges, we have to be that support, in essence, that almost that family, you can say, for them as they go through their undergraduate, even graduate experience. But targeting that first 1 to 2 years is critical. And I can tell you that learning communities, it's been proven, tutoring services, mentoring. One thing that we did that I would say was huge is I would find people on campus, whether it was our police chief, to the nursing department director, even to a vice president, okay? I would ask them if they would be willing to mentor a student in our program, and it was so successful, the people and their hearts to give back, that these students became bonded to their mentors. So they all had a campus mentor, they had student support, and we met once a week, you know, in class to talk about the process for college success.
I think it all gets back to also to the support for community colleges that we spoke of, because, I mean, if a GED student is going to go to college, it's going to be community college.
That's right. And community colleges are key. One thing I wanted to point out is that in 2011, the AIR, I don't know if you've heard of AIR, but it's the American Institutes for Research, and I actually sent them a copy of the book. They're looking at it right now, but they do amazing work in the field of research and putting out information in higher education. And there was a gentleman, Mark Schneider, he's the vice president of the AIR Institute, and he said that data collection and data dissemination are actually still in the dark ages in our country, and especially at community colleges, because most do not track, number one, they don't look at this population, but number two, they don't have retention metrics in place. And I can tell you that today in our country, our college system, looking at the community colleges, they're losing over $1.5 billion in revenue just by not taking the time to assist this population. And I can tell you that, you know, that's a huge financial loss, but there's a deeper human loss that cannot be ignored, because what we're doing now in our country to help our at-risk students, such as those with GED, it's going to impact the next generation. It impacts our economy. And these people have the ability. We just need to help them see that they have the potential within them. So, yes, community colleges are absolutely critical.
Still to come, our conversation with Dr. Angela Long continues with a look at the new standards for getting a GED. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1228. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Dr. Angela Long, an educational researcher, a professor of education, and currently an independent consultant in higher education. Dr. Long is chief editor of the new book, America's Forgotten Student Population. We're talking about students who have gotten GEDs, so I asked about the new standards recently put in place to earn a GED.
Well, I will say that, actually, if people are aware of GED testing, Nicole Chesting, she was the vice president. She's now moved on to work for the ACE, but she endorsed this book that we just put out. And I've talked with her, and she's a wonderful woman, does a lot of really good work in the system. And I participated recently listening. She did a webinar with the White House looking at the changes in GED testing. And I can say, from looking at just their perspective, I can kind of share what I hear in the pros and also concerns in the community. But looking at the changes in GED testing, I think that their goal, their intention is good. You know, that their ultimate goal is that they want to increase access and support and attainment for adults towards finding high-quality degrees and earning them certificates. And what they have done is that they realize, obviously, high school is no longer enough. In our society, it's not enough. You need a college education. Some that don't go on to college, I realize, can be successful. Maybe it's not for everyone, but for the large part, it's no longer enough just to have a high school diploma. And so what they have done, the GED testing with the changes, is they've looked at five really key critical areas that they want to focus on with the new changes. One is critical thinking skills. That's a big component to be successful in our country and in the workforce. They focus, number two, on problem-solving skills. How do you go about solving the problems as a competent worker in our society? Of course, written communication is huge because you find a lot of students, even high school graduates, they are not at the level of competency in their written and oral skills, which is a problem in our educational system today. They also look at the oral, as I said, communication. And number five, which is very applicable to today's society, is the digital literacy. So what they have done is they've set up a system where they're trying to provide more support, but at the same time, the test has become more difficult. At this point, there are several key expected changes that have taken place. And the first one is that they've changed the test to constructed item response. So in other words, the new test will have both short answer and extended item response writing exercises on all four subtests. And they've kind of changed the format. Now it's all online. It has to be done computer-based. And a lot of the test takers coming in, you know, if they had taken, let's say, three of the five battery tests prior to January, they have to redo the whole thing. So it's aligned to the Common Core. Now when you take the GED test, you can earn a certificate that says that you are college ready, so you can actually pass with honors. I think a lot of what they've done in terms of the support is good in the sense that if somebody does not have a GED or high school equivalent, they can go online and go to GED.com and you actually set up an account for yourself. There's a portal and it helps you with support before the test. It allows you to take pre-tests and access that. There's even online mentoring where somebody you can call someone for help if necessary. They help you schedule your test in your community. I mean, there's a lot involved with the new process, which I think is positive. But I will say this, that some of the concerns with the new testing is the cost. Now the cost has gone up significantly in many areas. Pearson View is running it, which is a for-profit group, and they are partnering with GED testing through ACE. And, you know, there are changes in that for those that don't have access, Bob, let's say, to a computer, especially when you're dealing with people in poverty. They don't have computers at home. They don't have access to technology. So the challenge is how do we help them, you know, be successful through this new online, you know, trend of focus. It's all online, the studying, the getting it together. How do we help them kind of jump over that huge high wall of I don't have access to technology? So that's a concern. Other concerns that people have mentioned is, let's say you pass the test, because now you can pass the test and not be college ready. I mean, have the honors. You don't have an honor certificate. Let's say you pass the test. Are you going to now see yourself as not capable of going on, you know, to higher education? And that's a concern I have. If inwardly they see themselves still as you know, a failure in their mind, then that may prohibit them from going forward. And in my experience, people have multiple intelligences. And for some, you know, the traditional paper pencil type test or even doing something multiple choice online does not truly demonstrate their knowledge base. And so for those that are more hands-on in telling you and showing you what they can do, they are going to probably suffer in the system because they're not given the opportunity. But obviously, you know, I think that there have been improvements with the new testing. It's just going to be a challenge for those that can't afford it and, you know, having the right types of preparation to pass the test.
Well, finally, looking ahead, we see that Common Core is getting tweaked in different states. Do you see this being tweaked and changed in the next, say, 5-10 years?
You know, that's a really good question. My personal opinion is yes, most likely you're going to see some shift in that area. I think that they are trying to move towards the Common Core and making things, you know, on the same playing field, which I think is good. We need to have standards, obviously, but who knows at this point? I mean, it's anybody's guess to see what's going to happen, because I can tell you right now, with the changes in the GD testing, that there's from my area, there's actually been a shift in fewer test takers, because I think there's a fear about the Common Core and the new requirements. And in the minds of a lot of these students, they are going, can I pass this? You know, and so it's really helping them overcome that fear within them. But who knows down the road what's going to happen in terms of further changes, because at this point, it could go either way. It could go either way.
Dr. Angela Long is an educational researcher, a professor of education, and an independent consultant in higher education. She's also chief editor of the new book, America's Forgotten Student Population. Right now, we could talk about something that makes perfect sense following our conversation about GEDs. Or we could, you know, talk about the earwax of whales. So guess which way we went for today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Scientists sedate and test many animals in the wild, but due to their size, blue whales have eluded this type of examination. Stephen Trumbull, assistant professor of biology at Baylor University, describes a new method of obtaining data about the world's largest animal.
Scientists in the past have used whale earwax as an aging tool, similar to counting tree rings. Dr. Sasha Yusenko and I question whether whale earwax could chronologically archive chemicals such as man-made pollutants or hormones. We developed analytical methods capable of answering that very question. Using a blue whale's earplug, we were able to extract and analyze the stress hormone cortisol, the male sex hormone testosterone, organic contaminants such as pesticides and flame retardants, and mercury, demonstrating that both man-made and endogenous chemicals are recorded and archived in whale earwax. We have been able to reconstruct contaminant and hormone profiles using whale earplugs, determining, for the first time, lifetime chemical exposures and hormone profiles from birth to death for an individual whale. Historically, scientists have used whale blubber to determine hormone and chemical exposure, but that method only provides information over short temporal scales, not to mention these samples can be logistically difficult to obtain and cost prohibitive. With these new data derived from whale earwax, we are able to assess the human impact on individual whales and multiple generations, as well as marine ecosystems. Using whale earplugs, we were able to go back in time and analyze archived museum earplug samples that have been harvested since the 1950s and examine critical issues such as the effects of pollution, the use of sonar in the oceans, and the introduction of specific chemicals and pesticides in the environment over long periods of time.
That was Stephen Trumbull of Baylor University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.